I'm not Irish.
So what were you doing at an Irish dance?
I really like Irish girls.
Hello and welcome to episode 89 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies. I am Perry Nemiroff, and here are my co-hosts, Christy Pachko and Angie Hahn.
Hey, everybody.
Hello.
So this week we've got two sections for you. Our hot topic is going to be Halloween picks, so our favorite Halloween movies, and then we're going to roll into our full review of Brooklyn. So first up is our Halloween picks, and Angie's going to start with that one.
Yeah, so we figured that since we've got a spooky weekend coming up, we would recommend a few movies that we thought that people might enjoy watching over the holiday weekend. I am going to go with The Babadook, which is streaming on Netflix. And you've probably, actually not probably, if you've heard this podcast, you've definitely heard us talk about it before because we talk about it all the goddamn time. It was one of our favorite movies of last year. But you know what? It still holds up. I've seen it a few times and it's still great. And it's really creepy, but not, if you're someone that can't really handle gore, it's not like that kind of gore. It's not like gory creepy. It's just like kind of this like dread and tension. And it's also... even if you're someone that finds horror movies kind of shallow, then this is a good one for you too, because it's actually it's pretty deep. It kind of works as a drama almost as well as it does a horror movie. And The Babadook is something that he seems like such an instant classic monster that I assumed that the movie was based on like a myth that already existed or something. It doesn't. He's made up just for this, but he's a monster that I think will be, will eventually just enter the pantheon of, like, classic Halloween monsters. And actually, I felt vindicated because in this week's episode of FX is You're the Worst, I'm going on a tangent, but they mentioned the Babadook.
I was thinking that. Vernon's like, they have a real-life Babadook at that spook house, and it made me so happy that that was a joke on You're the Worst.
Yeah. I want, like, a little Babadook figure, though. Like, you know those tiny little slashers I have? I'm waiting for
the Babadook.
You mean,
like, a little Funko Pop?
Yeah. Well, no, they're, like, even smaller than that, and they're, like, super cute, and they come in little mystery bags, and I want so badly for the Babadook to be in that rotation. But, like, a Babadook pop figure, I'm fine with that as well.
Eventually, I bet it'll happen.
Perry, why don't you tell us what your streaming pick is for Halloween?
So, mine is Trick or Treat, because I'm obsessed with Trick or Treat. And I also have Trick or Treat on the brain right now, because Tales of Halloween, which is another horror anthology movie, just came out, and it is so insanely disappointing that it made me really sad and made me have to watch Trick or Treat again and again and again, even though I plan on watching it multiple times on Halloween Day.
It's they have like a 24-hour marathon on one of the channels, right?
They used to have a 24-hour marathon, which I used to watch a lot on FearNet, but now FearNet no longer exists, so I'm not sure if any channel does it, but like at this point I own it, so I'll just watch it over and over on my own anyway.
24-hour marathon at your house.
It's a horror anthology, and it's actually a first feature from Mike Dougherty, who's going to deliver Krampus next month, December 4th, I believe, which I'm really excited about. But this one is a horror anthology with 5 stories, and you know how, like, with horror anthologies, one section is always better than the other? Well, this one actually is all above a certain level, and he weaves all 5 stories together so incredibly well that it feels like everything is taking place in one world, even though you're getting, like, really different mini narratives in there. But I think my favorite is still the school bus massacre revisited. I just love those masks. I love the visuals in that one. That I think that's still the top choice. But whole thing is well worth watching. Please check it out. It is my favorite. Watch it over and over again.
And then for me, I'm going to pick a movie from Netflix that doesn't get a lot of attention. I don't know why. It's called The Awakening. It's from 2011, and that's important because there's several The Awakenings on Netflix right now. This one stars Rebecca Hall, and it's like a gothic horror movie set post-World War I, and she is a kind of a mythbuster. She goes to seances and proves why everyone's fake and phony and whatever. But then she gets called to this boys' school that's supposedly haunted and has an experience that challenges everything she knows to be true. And it's really beautiful and spooky. It's a movie that I actually started one day just putting on in the background while I was doing something and liked so much that I stopped it and waited until I actually had time to sit down. And then I watched it twice in a row because I just thought it was that fun and evocative. And so if you're looking for something that is scary but not kind of in your face or, you know, gory, I think The Awakening's really great. It's a really good ghost story. And I think that's it for our Halloween trick and treat stuff. And so now we're going to look ahead to next week when Brooklyn hits theaters, and we're very excited about this movie. Here is the plot synopsis. In 1950s Ireland and New York, young Ailish Lacey has to choose between two young men and two countries. Now, this movie stars Saoirse Ronan. And it's getting her Oscar buzz already, which makes a lot of sense once you've seen it, because she manages to tell this incredibly thorough story of a young woman finding her, like, literal place in the world and where she belongs. And it's fascinating because the movie starts with her young and she doesn't want to leave Ireland, but there's literally, like, there's no jobs, there's no eligible men, like, there's just not a life for her there. So her sister sends her overseas through some connections she has to live in America, and she moves to Brooklyn. Yeah. And then while she's there, like, at first she gets really homesick, but then she meets this Italian guy. And she kind of starts to be able to see a life for herself there. But just at that time is when she gets called back home to Ireland because there's a family tragedy. And then back in Ireland, things have changed and maybe she could stay. And that's the main thrust of the story, is what choice will Ailish make. And I was just amazed because, you know, we've seen Saoirse Ronan play all kinds of roles. You know, we've seen her grow up on screen from Atonement to Hannah to whatever. But, like, to see her in this, this is a mature role that manages to be mature without being like, and now she's super sexy and trampy, because that's kind of the thing that ingenues get forced into a lot of the times to show how grown up they are, is to basically show a lot of skin. And while there's a love scene in this movie, it's not about showing skin. It's about showing her maturity and her kind of blossoming as a woman. And I saw this at the New York Film Festival and was just really blown away. I think Saoirse Ronan is outstanding in this, and this movie just made me deeply, deeply happy.
I think you guys know that this is not my kind of movie whatsoever. Like, there's probably no reason I
actually
should
like worried because Perry saw this before us, and Perry was like, "It's great," and I was like, "Oh God, what's gonna happen to this poor girl?"
Like, so someone's gonna, like, I don't know, some big, like, horror action scene or something crazy. But, like, no, it's just it's a really sweet love story and, like, a really layered coming of age story too. And I just really responded to the whole idea of leaving home and feeling homesick too. Mm-hmm. Like, that was kind of like my in with her, and wanting to, you know, doing something that you're uncomfortable with, but, like, so you could get something better out of it in a way. Mm-hmm. And I really just was very moved by that whole part. But I was also really impressed by how a lot of the movie at the beginning takes place in Brooklyn. She doesn't really go back to Ireland until pretty late in the game. So when she went back, I'm like, oh, you know, how is this going to work? There's no way they're going to ever make me think twice about, you know, who she's meant to be with.
Because Tony's so charming.
He is so charming. And you have to see, what's Emre Cohen in real life. He is funny. He's a funny kid. I think I stuck with the, for the interviews, I stuck with the homesick topic. And I said, what are you homesick most for? He's like, well, it's Rosh Hashanah, want my mom's brisket. And I'm just like, dude,
where's he from?
I think he's from New York.
So where'd you interview him that he was homesick?
Oh, this was at TIFF. No. It was like a topic about being homesick as related to the film, like what they personally are most homesick for.
Yeah, he's New York City born and raised.
I thought he was great in the movie. And Christy, I'm not going to say his name because, like, everyone's going to
judge
me.
It's Donal Gleason.
Donal Gleason, he was great too. And, like, you know, big props to him for making me sway in that direction just the slightest bit.
Well, that's actually what amazed me, because when I heard about this movie and I was like, oh, it's Donal Gleason versus some other guy, I'm never going to fall for the other guy, Donal all the way. And then I saw the movie, and Emery, I'd never seen him in anything before. Or I guess that's not true, because I've seen After School, but I don't remember that.
It's a real break. I mean, you know, Saoirse Ronan and Donal Gleason, we've seen in enough stuff that by this point we expect him to be fantastic. But I think this is a great breakout role for Emre Cohen, who has been in a few things, but not that many. Like, I think he's in that TV show Smash that nobody likes. And then he's in
He
was in The Place Beyond the Pines, starring Ryan Gosling and Bradley Cooper, which, frankly, I didn't think was that great a movie. And they don't give him that.
He was also in The Gambler for a hot second.
He's been in a bunch of stuff, but apparently nothing good. But this is a movie that really shows off, like, first of all, the thing in, like, Place Beyond the Pines and stuff, he plays kind of like a tough guy, like an asshole. And in this one, he gets to show a different side of himself, and he's incredibly charismatic. So I'm excited to see where this movie takes him. And I really do think, you know, it's not just the men in this movie. Like, I think Brooklyn does such a good job of kind of showing this situation with a lot of nuance. Like, one of the things I liked about her and these two men were that it's not like a perfect love story that she has with either of them. It's not one of those like, oh, they're star-crossed lovers, they're perfect for each other, like it's fated to be kind of thing.
They're
like,
both good choices.
It feels kind of like real life where you're just faced with two decisions and like, you know, and you're leaning toward one or the other, sometimes for the right reasons, sometimes for the wrong reasons. Some of it is about the person itself, some of it's about what they represent, some of it is, you know, the people and situations are things that are imperfect but that you could see working as opposed to just something that's like a perfect fit. So I love that a lot about this movie. The other thing I loved about it is how small scale of a movie this is. Like, one thing that surprised me is usually when we watch historical movies, it has to do with, like, you know, something of the period. Like, if it's in the 1940s, it's like almost always like a war movie or something that has to do with war or mm-hmm. like something like that. This just felt like, you know, there's no... I mean, I guess I was going to say there's no reason it has to be in the 1950s, but it kind of does make sense because going back and forth between New York and Ireland would be way easier these days. But it does feel like, it just feels like such an intimate story, like such a small scale story. It's not about like the world at large. I mean, it is because it's just, you know, it does a good job of building the context, but it's
you really can even say that in their approach to how she adjusts to New York City. You know, I feel like most movies would have been like, oh, bright lights, big city, you know, and had her go around and go up the Empire State Building and do all this cheesy stuff.
But that's
or
not
like
the
maybe narrate the whole movie
in, yeah.
from atop the Statue of Liberty. But no, it was all like every place she goes to is like strictly limited to what she needs to like make her own life here. And that was really refreshing. But another thing that you'd somewhat just touched on that I loved about this movie is how it's, you're like rooting for a character, but you don't necessarily know what you're rooting for the entire time. Like, it's not just with her love
exactly.
life. It's like with every single thing that she does.
I just wanted her to be happy, but I didn't necessarily know. Like, in a lot of movies, you watch and you're like, oh, well, if the hero does this, they'll be happy. And this was a movie where I watched and was like, I just want her to be happy, but even I don't honestly know at this point.
Yeah, I like
that, what she should do.
I think we're all agreeing on the idea that they tell this intimate story that really is about Eilish, as opposed to using her story as an agenda to talk about something bigger. It's really about this woman's story, and I think it's so elegantly told. And what I also really liked is that it's told, and because it is such an intimately set story, we get to spend time with a lot of characters that is valuable. Like, there's a lot of small roles in this that really shine because we spend just enough time with them to care. Like, for me, a big standout was Julie Walters as the as her like landlady when she lives in New York, because she does these family dinners with the girls that live with her. She has like a female boarding house, and I loved it. She's like a mother figure, but she's like a little sassy and a little uppity. And it was really charming to me, and it made me want to exist in this world and wanted to know these characters. And you get to know every one of the girls she lives with a little bit too. And like all of that enriched the story into that, you know, I wanted to spend more time in Brooklyn. I mean, like, the movie is very nicely paced and whatever, but when it was over, I was a little sad just because I was like, no, I could... more time with these people. Like, I really loved it.
The whole dynamic around that dinner table was great too. Like, not just her, but like all of the girls that she was living with. I could have like sat at that dinner table and just like watched them all interact for the entire movie. But I also love the stuff on the boat when she's coming yeah. over and how well that's bookended in the end. I just thought that was some of the, like, I could have actually watched an entire movie of just, like, learning how to make it from Ireland to Brooklyn just on the boat alone. Like, even that whole world had, like, really interesting rules and dynamics between all the characters.
One thing that really surprised me was, this is a novel that was adapted, but not originally written by Nick Hornby, which I found really fascinating because... you know, I think Nick Hornby, I think, like, dude movies, like High Fidelity. And this movie
He wrote an education.
He did. It's interesting. This
so
just really...
it's not like this is... it's not like it's, like, completely out of the blue for him to tackle a girl coming of age story. He literally did that before.
Totally, which true. But it's, like, what's surprising to me is that it does feel distinctly feminine. Like, I'm really impressed by him as a writer because it doesn't feel like one of those movies of what dudes imagine women feel like. Like... I mean, I think it's partially the writing. I think it's partially the direction from John Crowley. And I think it's partially, you know, just how amazing Saoirse is. They really created this narrative that felt authentic to me.
She is so good in it, though. Like, if anything, I think I have my fingers crossed most tightly for her to get a nomination. Her and Brie Larson.
If they overroom?
If her and Brie Larson get their nominations, I will be perfectly satisfied no matter who wins. I want her to get recognized because I feel like this movie isn't on that many people's radars, and it really should be. It deserves to be. It's better. I mean, this might be one of my favorite movies of the year at this point.
I would love if she got recognized on some level. I also, you know, as I've been saying, I would love if this helped launch Emery Cohen's career to the next level. I would love if this movie means that from now on, we're going to always see him rumored for those, like, goddamn, yes, like, franchise roles that apparently every actor his age has to, like, go through to, like, get to bigger things. So I really do hope that that's what's coming up for him.
I mean, you know, this is Fox Searchlight, and in years past, they have made pretty solid promotions. Like, they were the ones that distributed 12 Years a Slave, so... If they want to get behind Brooklyn, you know, they could. I'm hoping...
Do it, Fox Searchlight. Do it.
Yeah, I'm hoping they do strictly, like, almost entirely for Saoirse's role. But, I mean, I also think that Tony could get a nomination because he's wonderful and adorable.
All right, so it's pretty obvious, but what's, like, the general consensus on Brooklyn? A must-see.
This is exactly the kind of movie I want to see at this time of year, because you're going to see a lot of movies that are super tragic because they're trying to get Oscar attention. This is just uplifting and wonderful, and I honestly wanted to see it again immediately because it just made me feel great, and it's beautiful.
But uplifting in a way that doesn't feel, like, sentimental or phony or like it's, like, you know, manipulating you. I mean, all movies manipulate you to some extent, but that's a whole
it's not
other
hokey
conversation. It just feels, yeah, it just, I did, that is one of the things I liked about it. Like, it's a grown-up drama, and a lot of times, especially this time of year, it means, like, you know, there's, like, some dude is a genius, but an asshole, and then there's, like, angsty things that happen, and, like, big historical, you know, big historical reenactments, and this was just, like, it's kind of chill. It's just a movie about this one girl, and I love that. Like, I feel like, you know, a lot of times you, like, what I respond to in a lot of movies, no matter what kind of movie they are like, the really small human stories at the heart of it, and this makes that the whole movie, and I love that. And, you know, just real quick, the costuming and the set design in this is so great. Like, you really do feel like you're in 1950s Brooklyn without it, like, hitting you over the head with it. So, anyway, yes, go see it.
I mean, I second everything everybody says. Clearly, I love this movie very much, but I just also want to stress again that this movie is for everyone. Like, there's no way I would have gone out of my way to see this. The only reason I really saw it at TIFF was because I had to do interviews for it. That's why I saw it when I did. And I'm so glad I did, because all I want to do is watch it again now. It's got a little something for everybody. It is the sweetest movie. I loved it. Go see it. That's a wrap on episode 89 of Popcorn and Prosecco. You know the drill. Go to iTunes, where you can subscribe to us, and please rate and comment over there as well. We have our website, popcornprosecco.com. We are on Twitter, at Popcorn Prosecco. We are on Facebook, where you can like us, and then all three of us are all over the internet as well. Angie, you want to go first?
Yes, you can find me on Twitter at AJHAN, and I write for slashfilm.com.
Christy.
And I'm at Christy Puchko on Twitter. That's KristyPuchko. And I write all over the interweb, but you can find my career highlights at decadentcriminals.com.
And you can catch my writing on collider.com, and my Twitter handle is pnemiroff. So thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.